A healthy life starts with great sleep. Wake refreshed with Avocado's GOTS-certified organic green mattress, delivering breathable, back-loving support, natural materials from Avocado's own sustainable wool and latex farms, easy financing, a one-year sleep trial, and deep, restorative slumbers. Organic sleep awaits at avocadomattress.com.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. JC, you made a long trek all the way out, big ups to you, to take in that preseason game live. What was the journey in between and going home like? Pull back the curtains for the people.
Well, first of all, Monday is usually my day off of running the site, so I made the trek on my day of rest. Had to get up at we're cracking the whip over here. Had to get up around 7:30 in the morning to make sure I was out the door in time to catch the ferry and be there a little early. So eventually got the 9 o'clock ferry in the morning. Got to the other side. Thankfully, I was going to Uber the hour from the ferry terminal to the stadium. Ran into Farhan Lalji on the boat. He offered me a ride, so I went with Farhan all the way to the stadium, hour there, talked to the commish, talked to the team president, and then enjoyed a beautiful football game, and then did it all again on the way back. Didn't get home until about 8:15 at night. So basically a 12-hour day on my day off to get it all done.
That's how we do it, man. Just get it done. No questions asked. I'm curious, though, JC, what was the vibe like there?
The vibe was really nice. I mean, it was a smaller event than Touchdown Pacific last year, which was in Royal Athletic Park, which is more of a baseball facility. We were in the dugout, actually, as a makeshift press box last year, which wasn't ideal. But they jammed about 14,000 people into that that venue, which probably realistically could hold 10 to 12 comfortably. So it was a struggle. This at Starlight Stadium, it's an actual rugby venue, football venue for the West Shore Rebels. It only seats about 6,000, but it does that well. There were suites, there were enough amenities. The lines to everything were long, but not overly long. Everyone was comfortable. Wasn't a great day for it, and it's preseason football, so you can only get so excited. But I thought there was a lot more easy movement. There was less stress in the fan base, even if there was less rabid excitement as well.
Let's get into the show, boys.
I liked when you said it was gray and drizzly, because I was like, that's not necessary to report. We all assumed. But I guess you did your due diligence. And also, JC saying that he left at 7:30 in the morning, just for context, that's like 5 a.m. to a normal person. So well done, JC, getting up early in the morning. You did great work.
Appreciate it,
Hodge. Did once say that you would never be bright-eyed and bushy-tailed in the morning, but you were for football.
Oh, there was no bright eyes or bushy tail. I was dragging myself out like a zombie, but I got there. I got there nonetheless.
All right, let's get to the show, boys. Today, we're discussing Matt Dunnigan's departure from the CFL on TSN.
The BC Lions profiting off big name concert acts.
NFL owners approving players participating in the 2028 Summer Olympics.
Dalton Schoen returning to practice with the Blue Bombers.
Former second overall draft pick Nick Mardner likely being out for the season due to injury.
And the Argonauts signing a CFL draft pick following a stint in the NFL. But first,
we actually have a game of football to talk about. JC, you were in Langford, as mentioned, for Monday's preseason game between the Calgary Stampeders and BC Lions. Now that you've set the stage from an ambiance perspective, I want to know, what did you think about the actual game, which, of course, the Calgary Stampeders won 26-16? Who stood out to you, and what did you think of the performances as a whole?
Well, it reminded me that there's a reason why all the preseason games aren't televised, and that is that preseason football is terrible to watch. I didn't think it was particularly impressive from a quarterbacking perspective. PJ Walker goes out there and has sort of a middling day for Calgary. Nathan Rourke takes four snaps in his birthplace of Victoria, and then gets promptly yanked without throwing a proper pass. Jeremiah Mazzoli, I thought, didn't look great in his limited action. And then Chase Bryce was sort of middling as well. You get to see some of the dynamics of the new Lions offense. Lots of the six offensive linemen sets that we were expecting to see from Buck Pierce that should help the running game this year. But there weren't a ton of standouts or flashy performances. The guys that I will shout out, I thought BC's best player defensively was rookie safety Jackson Finley, their second-round draft pick, who they triggered up to get in the recent CFL draft. He was all over the field. They basically played him for three straight quarters on that back end, three tackles on defense, two more on special teams, a huge knockdown on a big-body Clemson receiver. Like, he was a beast in his first CFL action, and you'll see – I think they've got to find a way to get him a role on that defense alongside Christophe Beaulieu, who's already a pretty good starter at safety. And then on the Calgary side, I wasn't watching them as closely, but Ludovic Chiquette really stood out in that game. Their late-round pick running back out of Long Island University, he had some big blocks, he had some special teams tackles, and he had a 30-yard touchdown run at the end of the game, which was quite impressive. That's more than you expected to see from where they had him placed on the depth chart, so he should be quite proud of that performance.
You know, it is preseason football. I think that should be said first and foremost. JC alluded to that. It's great to be excited, but it's not quite real football yet. That's going to start on June 5th in Regina when the Red Blacks face the Riders. That said, though, I'm not usually big on wins and losses in the preseason, but I think this could be helpful for Calgary, who was coming off a last place finish in the CFL last year, to just get a little bit of that winning feeling within the franchise, the team, as they go forward here. You know, Vernon Adams Jr. didn't play, but honestly, my favorite part about the game was his interaction that you saw on social media with the fans. Like, this guy's maturity and the way that he's now going about being a professional. And even more than that, I think a legitimate star and a name in this league stands out to me. He's throwing passes with kids, you know, on the other side of the fence, like kind of going up and down the line in a way, making sure a bunch of them at least got a pass from him. That was really cool. That's how the CFL connects not only with its fans now, but the younger generation. Think of those kids. You know, they're going to go home and talk amongst their friends and obviously tell their parents about it too, but that they got to catch a pass or throw a pass to Vernon Adams Jr. Like, that's the type of stuff that can be larger than life to really get the next generation. What's the right word for it, boys? Maybe entrenched in your game.
Absolutely. I like that as well. And I thought your point is well taken, Duck, about the Stampeders. I thought they were the better team, which you generally do not see, right? Generally, right? CFL teams will send very inexperienced rosters on the road, and they'll play more of their vets at home. Now, as JC alluded to, the Lions only played Nathan Rourke for a small handful of snaps, which frankly I thought was lame. Like, if you're going to play him, play him. I'm not saying you got to give him a half or even a quarter, but can you please have him throw at least one deep shot corner route to somebody of consequence and give the fans something to cheer about? And if you're that unconfident about the protection in front of him, well, then dress one of your two starting tackles, which they did not do. They dressed backup offensive tackles. I didn't like that. I thought that that was lame. But I did not think the performance of Jermaine Jackson was lame. Mm-hmm. We talked about the BC Lions needing a player to step up in that receiving core to push Aiden Eberhardt and Stanley Berryhill. Jermaine Jackson, I've got his official pro day numbers in front of me. 5 foot six and a half, 176 pounds soaking wet, runs a 4.58 with 28 inch arms. Those are not the measurables you typically want to see from a prototypical receiver, but this guy was absolutely explosive after the catch. I loved his shiftiness, his ability to generate separation in space. I don't know if he's necessarily that wide out body type that you're looking for, but for a guy who you can put into the slot, a guy who could potentially contribute in the return game, we know incumbent Terry Williams is not back, for instance. I thought that he was a standout for me. Somebody who I did not think was a standout, somewhat surprisingly, was PJ Walker, the longtime NFL quarterback, 30 years of age, who got the start for the Stampeders, played the whole first half. He went 8 of 16 for 77 yards, had a couple of drops in there. Obviously, the Stampeders receivers weren't at their best. But for a guy who has, you know, 6-7 years of pro experience, predominantly in the NFL, also had a tremendous partial season in the XFL back in 2020 before that league hit the skids due to the pandemic, I was expecting a little bit more, not a lot more, but I think I was fair to expect a little bit more. So I'm very interested to see, assuming VA gets the start on Saturday when the Stampeders host the Elks for their second and final playoff game, I'm interested to see how PJ Walker looks when he takes over the reins.
Your point about Jermaine Jackson as well, taking there, Hodge, and I thought he looked great as a receiver, but I was also surprised that he appears to have this starting kick returner job on lock at this stage. The Lions have talked a bunch about all the options they have. They hyped up Jason Huntley's signing in the offseason, but then Jackson basically was the exclusive returner for three quarters of action on the island. That would indicate to me that he's pretty well set up and well positioned at this point to make this football team. Unfortunately, the other note that we should say about this preseason game was that it was marred a little bit by injuries. There was a lot of players going down. The Lions were surprised by how much they had to deal with in terms of the walking wounded and the casualties. Not lots of nicks and bruises, not a lot of serious injuries, but the Lions did dodge a bullet with George Una, their first-round pick from 2024. He was sort of their hopeful projection at right guard, was looking really good on the first series before he went down with what looked like a pretty serious leg injury. I've been told it's just a sprained ankle. He's going to be out for a couple of weeks, may not be ready for the season opener, but it's not a long-term concern. He's not going to miss the season. We can expect to see him starting down the line. Some of the other guys who were injured in that game aren't going to be so lucky. David Durden, the rookie receiver who caught the touchdown on that opening drive, he hurt his leg late in the game, and he is probably not going to be able to return. You have to think that and his hopes of making the roster this year. And it looked like a pretty serious injury on Calgary's side to American rookie fullback Ryan Jones, who had a splint on his leg when he was being carted off. Both teams were attending him, and he was in absolute agony. You just hate to see that in the preseason when these guys have basically no protection as rookies trying to make the roster.
Let's just give PJ Walker a little bit of time, okay, fellas? It's early, I think, in training camp to even be having a preseason game. I know because of the unbalanced number of teams that you have in the league that you have to do this. But like, it's literally his first CFL action. So I know the hype is there, and he definitely needs to meet it. But let's see how he looks if he plays a decent amount of time in the second preseason game and if we do see him at all during the regular season. I think that will be the real test.
My dog apparently.
Jesse, your dog agrees.
He's a big PJ Walker guy.
I know that, yes, it's early in camp. And by the way, that is one of the very strange things about having a 9-team league is that you have to have one preseason game super early so that one team can play quote unquote preseason week one. And then again on quote unquote preseason week two, you obviously can't have a late preseason game because cuts all have to be done at the same time. So the only solution is have a really early one. But this guy's been a pro player for 7 years. Like there. I appreciate
new league,
the CFL
new offense,
I appreciate the CFL is new. This guy started 20 games in the NFL. like 20 games in the NFL. At a certain point, an 8 yard out is an 8 yard out, and you just have to sling it. I thought he was okay. I thought he was okay. I didn't think he was great. Justin, you are bringing in the next segment.
Oh my gosh, I'm looking at the wrong one. Here we go. Todd, you exclusively reported Matt Dunnigan will not return to the CFL on TSN. What can you tell us about the 64-year-old's departure from the network?
I mean, I can't say much about it. I know more than I've reported. The only thing I'll say is I think that there was some speculation from people. I know I got a ton of comments on social media from readers and listeners and viewers asking or wondering if this was some type of health crisis or some type of health related thing. I've been led to believe that this is nothing to do with the health of Dunnigan. Obviously, I can't speak for Matt Dunnigan. I reached out to him for comment. He has not replied, but I don't believe this is a situation where people should be sitting at home panicked that Matt Dunnigan is ill. I don't believe that health has been a factor in this decision. The other thing I'll say is this is kind of, in a way, the end of an era. I mean, Matt Dunnigan joined the CFL on TSN in 1999, and outside of 2004, when he was the head coach of the Calgary Stampeders, which, by the way, is something I always forget happened. Like, I do not think of Matt Dunnigan as a CFL head coach, though he technically was one for a year.
You don't remember the Kevin Federick era?
I do remember it. Like, I was alive for it. I was a teenager for it. I just don't remember Matt Dunnigan as a head coach. I remember him. Actually, I'm too young to remember him really playing, but I've seen so many highlights. I feel like I grew up watching him play. And then I've obviously seen him on the panel for 25 years. And again, outside of that one 2004 season, he has been on the CFL on TSN consistently since 1999. So it does feel like the end of an era there. Obviously, he was primarily a panelist and analyst for TSN. Occasionally, however, he would do color commentary. I personally always enjoyed him in the booth with his colorful delivery and his colorful choice of language. So I will miss seeing Matty on the panel and on TSN. But his time has come to a close. We do have some intel as to who could be up to bat to replace him. I'll leave it up to Justin for what he wants to say about it.
I think when it comes to Dunnigan, I understand where fans are coming from with the outcrying of maybe outrage or mourning for his departure. I feel it too, because as you lay out there, Hodge, in my lifetime of watching the CFL, there's really never been a season that I can recollect. Now, I was pretty young for that 2004 one where Dunnigan wasn't part of the broadcast. I grew up with him delivering the CFL action to me. His antics and his sort of jumbled delivery at times, it was comical, it was engaging, he was fiery, wasn't always the cleanest or the most polished, but he was certainly a guy that a lot of people gravitated to. And when you're watching someone for so long, you really gain a connection. But the flip side of that is things stagnate, right? And I think we can all agree that for all the respect we have for the guys who work at TSN and everybody on that panel and what they did as players and now in the media space, things had stagnated there and there needed to be changes to attract the next generation of fans and to reinvigorate that broadcast. And you can't demand changes and then also ask the network to keep around a 64-year-old, right? That doesn't work. Those two things do not mesh. To get one, unfortunately, you're going to have to make changes to the other. And that's, I think, what happened here. TSN's going to go in a different direction. Remains to be seen whether or not it will be a positive direction or what people are hoping for. But at least they're making the attempt. Unfortunately, it just comes at the cost of a legend of the game.
JC, I think that's very well balanced and said, as much as some of that or all of that might be difficult for Matt Dunnigan or the close people around him to hear at the moment. And I don't want to always be in the game of, comparing the CFL to the NFL, but I will in this instance because I think it's relevant. If you look at the NFL pregame and postgame shows, those panels change pretty frequently. And the competition to get on there is strong. And I think that has been somewhat lacking for the CFL on TSN. And Matt Dunnigan just happens to be topical because of his departure. But it makes a lot of sense, right? There are players who leave the game, then go into NFL media training to try to get on those panels or be on NFL Network or, you know, be on CBS, NBC, Fox, ESPN. They're coveted roles. And I think that's where we need to get to with TSN, you know, potentially in the future. And it sounds like they're at least going to have the first right of refusal, according to Stuart Johnson, in terms of the broadcast rights, because where there's competition, just like all these guys competed on the field, that's going to bring out the best. So I hope that's something that's learned here through this process, as difficult as it can be, because when you have longstanding relationships with not only your colleagues on the panel, but arguably more importantly, the people behind the scenes that do so much of the grunt work to make you look great on camera, that it's difficult to say goodbye. But I think within this change, there can be a new fresh coat of paint, let's say, or a whole new vibe potentially around the panel going into the future. I'm not going to say who I've sourced and know is going to join the panel in some form or fashion. You'll have to keep it tuned to 3downnation.com for that. But what I will say, fellas, is with Matt Dunnigan not returning, the CFL and TSN does not currently have a former CFL quarterback within its roster of commentators, color analysts, or panelists. To me, that's a gaping hole. I'm not going to sit here as a former Canadian University quarterback and say quarterbacks know everything, but I think you need to have one. And there are some guys out there that I think would be intriguing, that if you can entice them to be a part of TSN's coverage, would be excellent. But that's not who I'm hearing, at least the one specific person. It's not going to be a quarterback that's going to come in and take over at least some of the role for Matt Dunnigan.
But I think if you're the CFL and TSN, right, you had a lot of eggs in the Henry Burris basket, right? If you go back five or so years ago, you know, multiple time MOP, multiple time Grey Cup winner, obviously gregarious personality, a guy who made headlines in his career for great plays, but also for viral moments, right? Henry Burris once told the CFL on TSN panel to shove it, and then famously joined them just a few years later, like a fiery personality, but a likable guy who, by all accounts, conducted his business very well and very professionally off the field for his almost 20-year playing CFL career. Obviously, the coaching bug bit Henry Burris, and he's been doing that for the last bit of years. So I agree that having no quarterback is a problem. I also think that having, outside of Enoch Buamba, nobody who anybody under the age of 30 remembers playing is a problem. Like, you always need, I think, at least one recent player on the panel. Up until Enoch Buamba joined last year, the CFL on TSN didn't really have that. I think that's now rectified, but finding a quarterback, I think, will be the next step for sure.
The challenge to that is, I think TSN has made it clear in their actions, if not overtly saying it, that they don't want to be in the business of flying people in every week for the panel anymore, right? They'd like them to be located in Southern Ontario. So unless you're a quarterback who is making his full-time home in that region, I don't think they want to spend the money to go out and get you. That eliminates guys that we've talked about in the past, like a Travis Lule, who would be great on the panel, who doesn't live in that area of the world, or, you know, a Ricky Ray, if you were to look at the, you know, dream big, he's not in that area and has no interest in doing that. So even with the active quarterbacks, who's going to make the jump to solidify himself? We've always talked about Bo Levi Mitchell. I've been told he's back in the States now. He's moved back after briefly moving his home to Hamilton. He is now in North Carolina, or South Carolina, one of the Carolinas, and that could potentially eliminate him from the panel down the road.
there was a quarterback that used to live in the GTA, somewhat under the radar, fellas. That was Darian Durant. And I thought that that could have potentially been a match, but, you know, there were some things going on there with Darian and the Rough Riders and his departure and a whole bunch of stuff. But that is out the window now because he has moved his family, as far as I last know, down to Florida. So that's a well-taken point. I think it makes a lot of sense that you want to have somebody who's near there because you're there a lot. You know, talking to Davis Sanchez about that, especially him doing the CFL and TSN panel, you know, what else he does for TSN from CFL coverage, but he also does NFL coverage. So like TSN wants people that are going to be readily available to be in studio because it looks the best and comes across, the most professional. So I totally understand it from that viewpoint. So it makes it difficult, as you guys said, if you're trying to bring in a quarterback. I'm not saying that like you have to have one, but if you look at the NFL, like the big time names who are color guys and are on the panels, like there's always a quarterback. You know, look, Matt Ryan, I think, is on CBS. You got Tom Brady on Fox. You got Tony Romo doing color on CBS and on down the list. There's usually always a quarterback. Kurt Warner does a lot of stuff with NFL Network. I think that's a key. And usually those are the types of people that the fans know the most. You know, the one at the moment, if we're talking about just guys that live in the GTA, that could make sense if you're TSN and you might want him, is Zach Kolaris, because he makes his offseason home in the GTA. Mm-hmm. But he's been on the record as talking about wanting to go into coaching. So unless he makes that switch, then you're going to be looking for another quarterback. That's right. I like when your dog barks because it makes me feel confident.
He only barks when you are making points. So clearly he's a big Justin Gunk guy and he's just trying to lend his support.
Or he wants me to shut up. One of the two.
BC Lions president Dwayne Veneux pulled the curtain back a little bit in an interview with you, JC, when it comes to the team's concert kickoff series. He said the team doesn't lose money when hiring A-list acts like 50 Cent or Snoop Dogg, and even makes a little bit of profit, though there's a bit of a caveat. What is it?
Well, the caveat is that it's not coming from the club finances when they're hiring these acts. This is Amar Doman, who is paying it out of pocket, who takes the challenge and the burden of hiring these acts and finding them and recruiting them and bringing them in onto his own shoulders and does it without essentially telling anybody at the club, even Veneux, who it's going to be until it's essentially a done deal. Veneux even mentioned that, you know, he sits back like a fan, just waiting with anticipation to find out what Doman is going to deliver this year. And that's truly a remarkable action by an owner who's shown that he is willing to spend money to make money, because by doing that, the Lions are able to generate interest, to increase ticket sales for this specific game, and increase their attendance for the season as a whole. It's been a tremendous strategy thus far, but it's really telling that this is such a personal investment from Doman, and he essentially views it as a free gift to the province of British Columbia, a buy one, get one free, if you will. Come to this football game and you get a concert if you want. I think that's brilliant.
Can something be profitable if a gift is involved?
Legally, yes.
Great answer. You know, and I love it. I'm not saying I don't, but I just want to make sure that we're being transparent here. And I think we're trying to be to the best of our ability and being fair about it. It's great what Amar Doman has done for the BC Lions, and, you know, especially with this concert series. You know, I can't forget, who was the lady that won the CFL award last year that works for the Lions?
Caroline Cody.
That's it. She was talking about how they've actually seen fans return and that their investment is not just in that single game, but for other games that season and subsequent seasons. So the upfront investment of getting these A-list concert acts has led to fans coming back is what I'm trying to get at. So I really love the initiative. You know, it's somewhat of a joke when I'm talking about a gift and being profitable, but it's great. And I think it shows, you know, talk to people behind the scenes, some of the other owners around the league, that they're going to have to step up here to keep up with the Joneses, so to speak, or to keep up with the Mardome and what he's doing with the BC Lions. JC, you're out there day in and day out, literally, and you're around the team a lot, especially at all the home games. It just seems like this is a franchise on the way up. You know, we could talk about the football. That's a different thing. But in the region, it seems like there's some legitimate, dare I say, growing excitement about what this team has going on.
There absolutely is.
The quote that stood out most to me was Dwayne Vinnis saying that, you know, the first couple years, the big ticket push didn't happen until they announced the act. Whereas last year, they'd sold 30,000 tickets before they even announced 50 Cent, because people just knew, oh, there's going to be a big A-list act here, and I want to make sure I have my seat. So they are building a culture, right? They are building an expectation in BC where customers, without even doing the promo, the customers are already coming to buy the product, which I think is what you'd want in any business situation.
And they've done a great job with the promo and the advertising throughout the season. There was a lot of years, and I think you probably experienced this when you're in Toronto, Dunk, where there's just no CFL presence, right? There's not a lot of things on the billboards or in the transit system or, you know, on the streets to indicate that there's a CFL team playing. And for many years in Vancouver, it was like that. That changed when Doman took over, right? There was a reinvestment in making sure that they were visible in the city, that people knew what was going on. And then I think it's extremely smart that they make this marketing push consistently in regards to the concert kickoff series, because not only do they make an announcement when there is an act that is hired, they make an announcement a couple of months before that, hey, remember, there will be an act. And then they say, oh, we've already sold 30,000 tickets. There will be an act. Wait to hear about it. Then they announce the act. Then they come back a week later and say, wow, in the last week, we've sold 10,000 tickets. It's hard to avoid that news and the sense of FOMO, right? The fear of missing out when you get all that attention and you're saying, wow, I better grab my tickets quick or I'm not going to be able to see Snoop Dogg and catch the Lions game after. I think they've done a really good job with those sorts of little things.
Well, and I think you laid these numbers very well out in your piece, JC, which you may or may not have gotten from me, but that's okay. The Lions averaged in 2019, 17.8 thousand fans per game. That's the last full CFL season before Doman bought the team. In 2024, they averaged 26,000 or 26.9 thousand fans, just shy of 27,000. Now, people will say, well, but that's numbers inflated because of the 50 Cent concert, blah, blah, blah. Fair enough. I think it's also deflated partly because, of course, Touchdown Pacific only had a capacity, as we talked about, of 14,000 games. So if you take out the concert kickoff series game and Touchdown Pacific, which one of which had a larger than normal crowd, one of which had a smaller than normal crowd, the seven other regular season games at BC Place averaged 24.8 thousand. So over just a five-year span, we have seen the Lions go from 17.8 to 24.8. That is a very substantial increase. That's in and around 40%. And all of that has come, presumably, as a result. I'm sure Nathan Rourke and his emergence had a little bit to do with it, but I think a lot of it has had to do with the reinvestment that Amar Doman has done with this club and trying to build that fan base. If that had not happened, I don't believe the Lions would be averaging even 17.8 anymore. I think their attendance would have continued to slide, as this, remember, was a market that in the early days of David Brayley was regularly getting over 30,000 people to regular season games. It was a very slow but steady decline attendance-wise in BC. The only way to reverse that is to try to build it up the other way. And thus far, they have done that. They're on track by 2027 to have over 30,000 people back in that building for every single game, and I would not be surprised at all if they accomplish that.
Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta could make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at Kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
The NFL has formally approved players' participation in the 2028 Summer Olympics, which will feature flag football for the first time ever. The tournament will feature six men's and women's teams competing for gold, all of which will feature 10 players. Meanwhile, CFL Commissioner Stuart Johnston said he would love three down league players to be able to compete as well. What does this mean for Team Canada, the Olympics, and the CFL?
Well, there's a lot of different angles that we can attack this from, and I will leave some of the positivity or the fortune telling to you guys, because I don't think this means much for anybody, because I don't think the public or even the CFL at this stage has any idea about what they're talking about when it comes to qualifying for flag football at the Olympics. You want to talk about sending CFL players to play for Team Canada? Well, first of all, how many of them are actually going to make it with the NFL talent we have right now? But there may not even be a team for them to play for. We're not just putting the cart before the horse, gentlemen. The horse is in a different town right now, and everyone else has left with jockeys, right? We are so far behind on the flag football thing in this country. We went to the World Championships last year in 2024 in Finland. And this was not a team of scrubs. Mason Nias, who was an exceptional U-Sports quarterback, was the quarterback of the team. They had two former CFL draft picks in Colton Clausen and Mitch Hillis on that roster. You would think that that would be a winning formula. That would be our expectation as Canadians, with our understanding that we're the second best football nation in the world. We finished seventh. We got our butts kicked by Finland. We got our butts kicked by Switzerland. We beat Italy in the first game by a single point and then got blown out in the consolation round by 25 points by Italy and finished seventh. There's only six teams that are making the Olympics, gentlemen. We've got to make a step forward if we want to get there, and we're not going to be able to rely on our NFL or CFL talent to do the qualification. That will all come before they're involved. So the hiring of Paul Lapalisse was the first step in that direction to try and catch up and build this program. But there's some serious reckoning and some serious work that needs to be done leading into the 2026 World Championships and the qualification events beyond that to ensure that Canada is even in the tournament. Because right now, that seventh place seed, that was an overachievement based on where we've been ranked in the world. It does not look great for Canada.
There's so many different directions to go. And I first want to start with the name you mentioned there, Paul Lapalisse, because no disrespect to Paul, It hasn't really worked out well for him as a head coach in the Canadian Football League, which is a league that he's been in for how many years, fellas? And now you're going into a completely different game. One game that I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know. JC probably has the most knowledge about it of all three of us. But I'll just give you this little story, okay? Shortly after university, one of my buddies who was living in Toronto was playing flag football or touch football, one of the like. I think it was flag football. And he asked me to come out and play. I didn't really want to because I don't think you can quite get back to that compete level that tackle offers if you're not full go. But anyways, went out and played, and we showed up, and the other team, you know, looked like a bunch of honestly fat, out of shape dudes that are in their 40s that we're just going to run over. But this team had been playing together for years and knew all of the intricate rules that flag football offers. Now, we almost beat them, which actually shocked some of the younger players on the team that I was moonlighting with, I guess we'll call it, because no other team had even come close. But that goes sort of to JC's point into a bigger point. You know, even talking about the NFL players in this, the way the rules are constructed right now, it's a completely different game. It's my personal, I don't want to say belief, but I would make a personal suggestion that I think the NFL has pushed this so far along because the NFL is trying to compete on a global stage with soccer. Okay. That is their competition right now on a global stage. Some people will say basketball, but I think the NFL is quickly closing that gap with the NBA. They're trying to compete with soccer, which is the biggest global game bar none. And the best way for the NFL to do that is through the avenue, yes, of flag football, but for flag football to somewhat resemble the NFL game. Because if there's a whole bunch of gimmicky plays that we're seeing out there, I don't think that people are going to necessarily connect that with the tackle style of NFL football that the NFL wants people to ultimately be viewing and watching and betting on and spending their money on around the world. So I think there's a couple of different things at play here. Let me just go back to my first point. I'm not saying Paul Lapolis can't get it done, but even if Canada qualifies for the Olympics, which as JC laid out, is a little bit of a long shot right now, I think they can make the changes to get there. But I don't think Paul Lapolis would be the head coach at the Olympics, with all due respect, because you look at some of the other names out there. I'm not going to go into it yet. And then as JC touched on, no, I guess I'll leave this for Hodge, but the pool of NFL players you look at right now, if the game is going to resemble mostly NFL players, or if people believe that NFL players are the potential best athletes on the planet, now that's a debate probably for another day, then the CFL might only have a couple, they'll be lucky to have a handful of players. So I don't think you need to pause the season. And we'll go down the roster here in a second. But I think those are two key things, that flag football is a very different game. And Paul Lapolis is going to have to make a massive transition here just to give Canada a decent chance, let's say, of qualifying for the Olympics.
Justin, you talked about beating a bunch of random chunky dudes who look like they're in their 40s. And I just want to say, the least you could do to JC and I is use our names, okay? Like,
you guys are in my 40s?
So disrespectful that you're just not even willing to acknowledge the fact that we beat. I'm just kidding. But we should get into the roster because, as mentioned, these are 10 player teams. And by the way, I know that this is like it's not really a demonstration sport. It's a first time sport at the Olympics, but six teams seems like a weirdly small number. Like half the teams are going to win medals. Like for curling, for a lot of other sports that I follow more closely, that are team sports in the Olympics, you have at least 10, if not a dozen teams. Six feels like a weird number, but whatever. They didn't ask me. Quarterback. Presumably there's four guys realistically who are options right now. And we should know this is 3 years out, right? We're talking in May 2025. The roster for the Olympics will probably be put together roughly in this month, 3 years from now, right? In 2028. But right now, it'd be Taylor Algersma, Curtis Rourke, Nathan Rourke, and Trey Ford. By the way, Nathan Rourke will be 29 in the summer of 2028. Trey Ford will be 30. So maybe a little bit older than your average flag football player, but still young enough, I think, to get it done, be athletic, all those good things. Running back, you've got two good NFL options right now in Chuba Hubbard and Chase Brown. Receivers, you've got a ton. You've got Elik Eilmeier, the third-round pick to the Tennessee Titans this year. You've got John Metchier, Josh Palmer, Jared Wayne, Chase Claypool. Obviously, Claypool not on our roster right now. Wayne, a bit of more of a periphery guy, but all good players. And then defensively, just in DBs, you've got Javon Holland, Sidney Brown, Dean Leonard, Benjamin St. Just, and Taylor Rapp. Now, Rapp will be in his early 30s by the time the Olympics rolls around. Ben St. Just, a big-bodied press guy. To me, that doesn't translate to flag football, but the point we're illustrating here is you could put together, depending on who the quarterback is, a full Team Canada for the Olympics comprised entirely of NFL players. So I know that was a conversation that you had with Stuart Johnston, JC, was, well, how do you handle if the CFL, you know, because obviously the difference is the NFL, they don't have to pause anything. Their season doesn't start until September. Having a bunch of guys go out and compete in the Olympics in July is not a problem. For CFL, that is right in the heart of the CFL schedule, like week six, week seven, week eight. To me, looking at this roster, there is no need for the CFL to press pause on their season. Would it suck for the Edmonton Elks or whichever team has Trey Ford under contract at that time if he were to hypothetically become the quarterback of Team Canada? Yes, but guess what? Every team loses their starting quarterback for a game or two. It's bound to happen. We'll have to wait and see, obviously, but to me at least, there seems to be no reason for the CFL to change its schedule because in all likelihood, we're talking about two or three players from the entire league who are going to make this team. Of course, we're projecting a few years out, but that would be my guess. Two to three CFL players will go to the Olympics as flag football players. If that's the case, there's no need to change the CFL schedule.
Yeah, right now, as it stands, and again, things will change a lot in 3 years, but there's exactly two CFL players that I would put on that Olympic flag team if it was happening in 2025. That would be Trey Ford as my quarterback, because I think he is far more equipped to what the traditional flag game looks like. I know to Justin's point, that might change, but as it stands right now, his ability to move around and make people miss is far superior to the other options. I think he would be my quarterback for a flag team. And then I would also have his twin brother, Tyrell, on the defensive side of the ball just because of the athlete that he is. I think he's quick enough that he can flip over to offense if we need. Keep in mind, right, if there's an injury here and you're only bringing a roster of 10 players and you've got five aside, you need a guy who can Travis Hunter a little bit. I think Tyrell Ford can probably do that for you if you need him to. That's really it. And that could change going forward with the way NFL rosters shake out and a bunch of Canadians get backlogged on the same team like we've seen happen with the Dallas Cowboys in the past where we've got three or four Canadians on the same roster. Well, that might influence it as well because the NFL rules are going to dictate that only one player per team per country can participate. So at this stage, like Jared Wayne and John Metchier could not both be on the Canadian team because they are both members of the Houston Texans. So you would have to pick one or the other. All of that will come into play. But the other thing we haven't discussed, gentlemen, is there's a whole other pool of college players that would presumably be eligible as well, who also would not be in their season. They'd be in the offseason. So would you rather have a Jet Elad in your defensive backfield? Is there going to be a compelling option at that stage at quarterback or at receiver that potentially takes one of those CFL spots that you could project right now? I think all options are on the table, and it's not going to be a guarantee that we see any CFL players whatsoever, even if Canada qualifies.
Tyrell Ford is a great example, JC, and I think it drives home the point that you have to have the versatility. Tyrell Ford told me in a sit-down during the CFL car wash that he feels like he could be a 2,000-yard receiver in the Canadian Football League. And I don't blame him. He's caught passes from his brother for the majority of his career, you know, until Waterloo and in the pros, but they did it you know, essentially when they were growing up together, just shredding defenses in Niagara. So I think that's a great point. And I just want to be clear, like, what JC's saying is not necessarily a shot at CFL players, but like, you know, half of them essentially are American. There's some globals there. And then you're looking at like the elite athletes. There's one guy for me, I think, that could be in the mix because of his versatility, and that would be Nick Dembski. But again, we're projecting this out 3 years, right? So like, no disrespect to Justin McInnes, who's a great, more of a jump ball guy and uses a waggle, but I don't necessarily know if he fits the flag game well. Like, that's something that, admittedly, I need to learn more about. And I think all of us, as we go through this process to see what potentially happens with Team Canada qualifying for the Olympics as well. So I think you can drill down a little bit more there. But this point really illustrates that, you know, if people view the NFL as the best league in the world, and that's no disrespect to the CFL players, that roster at least largely is going to be made up of NFL players. I think Tyrell Ford and, you know, some of the other guys that you're going to look at in the CFL have that NFL caliber, just didn't get a legit opportunity, let's say, in the NFL. Like, I think Tyrell Ford could legitimately be playing in the NFL or could easily be on a practice roster with his athleticism, but it comes down to a numbers game. For this purpose, though, I think it's going to be really intriguing to watch the process play out. And I think JC's point stands out the most is that it's not going to be NFL players or current CFL players that get this team to qualifying for the Olympics. And, you know, based on some conversations behind the scenes, what needs to happen here is that Team Canada or Football Canada, whoever's directing it, Paul Appelese, they need to have an all-star team. It can't just be sending Mason Nias and the Canadian champions, with all due respect to the world championship. It has to be the best athletes that fit to sport that can also come together as a team. That's our pathway to qualification. Like, we've shown on the international stage just playing football, like, look no further than that friendly against Italy where Canada ran roughshod over them, that playing football, like tackle football, that we can compete with the best out there. Some might argue the talent that's on Team USA year to year. I totally understand that. But other than that, I think there's a decent argument out there to be made that as a tackle football country, Canada is right in the argument, if not the second best country in the world. I know it's an argument, but I think that's a legitimate one. Now we're talking flag football. So I believe that that transition can be made. But from Paul Appelese and everybody with Football Canada on down, that is going to have to be one that is made relatively quickly for them to qualify here. Right, JC? That tournament's coming up pretty soon.
Yeah, 2026. My understanding is the top three teams from the 2026 tournament will qualify automatically for the Olympics. So that's your first shot. The U.S. will presumably get an auto bid because they're the host nation. That's typically what happens, although they would be one of those top three. So presumably it's really the top four from that tournament. And then there will be another makeup tournament the following year to fill out the last two spots. That doesn't give you a lot of time. Now, I think using my horse analogy from the start, right, we've got the second fastest horse in the world, right? I think we can make up that distance if we try really hard and we all pull together on the reins. But we've got to prove it. Right now, we have not proven it in this particular arena. And I'll remain skeptical until I see it come together on the large stage.
And I appreciate you throwing out Nick Dembski's name, Justin, but Nick Dembski's going to be 34 years old in the summer of 2028. So, fantastic CFL player, but a perfect example of a guy where in 2025, you think of him, oh, Nick Dembski, 3 years from now? I don't know if Nick Dembski is going to be in consideration to play on the Olympic flag football team, if in fact Team Canada even qualifies. So certainly an interesting thing and kind of a new development, which is exciting. We're excited to cover some flag football and some international stuff here at Three Down Nation. That'll be a lot of fun.
Let me just say real quick, I do think Team Canada can qualify. Like,
of course,
I don't want to put this out there as like a super long shot. I think it's nobody's viable that they qualify. I just think that we've done a decent job of laying out here what potentially has to change in the steps for that qualification.
Yeah. It just can't be taken for granted, right?
No, no. Because I think there's a lot of people right now who, when thinking about flag football at the Olympic Games in 2028 in Los Angeles, are already piecing together their Team Canada roster, which we have, in fact, done here a little bit. But I do think it's important to note to people, there is no guarantee that Team Canada will even be there. And we would be very remiss in our journalistic duties if we didn't lay that out for people. Like, there is work to be done. It is not a guarantee. And we'll have to wait and see for 2026 and 2027, depending, as JC laid out, if in fact the Maple Leaf will be in the flag football tournament. It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 2022, the Ottawa Redblacks signed standout defensive lineman Bryce Carter out of James Madison University, where he made 9 sacks the previous year and was named an FCS All-American. The native of Sealton, Pennsylvania, dressed for only 7 games as a CFL rookie, but has since exploded onto the scene, making 16 sacks over the past 2 seasons and earning an All-East Division selection in 2023. Now 27, Carter is one of the league's highest paid edge rushers. JC, we'll start with you. Bryce Carter, as a CFL success, what stands out most about his game?
Well, I love his ability to bend and dip under guys. He is a perfect model of somebody who still slips through the NFL cracks, because I think a lot of the tweeners that we used to get as CFL pass rushers are going to the NFL now because of how much they covet pass rush. But guys who are under 6 foot, guys who are 5'10", like a Bryce Carter, like a Florin or a Malagi, they're still not getting that shot because the NFL covets length. So these are the players that we have to target in the CFL to be tremendous pass rushers. Carter has proven it, or Malagi has proven it. I think he's a stud and still is underrated by CFL fans.
Great find by the Ottawa Redblacks, but I'm curious, fellas, how well can you bend and dip?
Not at all.
I'm great at dipping. I can dip into salsa. I can dip into nacho cheese. I can dip into ranch. It's the bending part that is a problem.
I tell you what, Doug, actually, I lied. I'd be a great bender if I was a CFL edge rusher, because as soon as the tackle hit me, my body would bend the opposite direction and snap in half.
Boys, come to hot yoga with me. We'll get you bending in all different kinds of ways.
No.
Fine. 3-minute drill. CFL Commissioner Stuart Johnston said he supported negotiating down Zach Collaros' suspension from 2 games to 1. Did that surprise you?
Not really. And Johnston did say that this was more or less decided by the time he came aboard. I still wish we had more details as to what the extenuating circumstances were, but it was nice to get Johnston's take on the record for this. Based on playing against him, Bolivar Mitchell thought Kenny Lawler was going to be, quote, an a-hole, but said he's actually, quote, probably the best teammate on the team. Does that make sense?
Well, it's certainly an interesting commentary from your quarterback, but I liked that Bo was comparing Lawler to Simone Lawrence. I think that should get people fired up in Hamilton that he thinks they are leaguers of a similar ilk. Trevor Harris compared Riders receiver Joe Rubastelli to Greg Ellingson. That seems like awfully high praise, no?
It definitely is, but 2 things to note here. Trevor Harris doesn't dish that kind of praise out often, so if Harris is saying it, it's warranted. And Robustelli's story, guys, is unbelievable. Mm-hmm. The fact that he's even on the cusp of making, let's call it the active roster in Saskatchewan, dig into it a little bit. JC, you had the piece up at 3downnation.com. It's a really unique, possibly a positive only in the CFL type story. The Ottawa Redblacks will likely be without former second overall CFL draft pick receiver Nick Mardner for the season after he suffered a knee injury in practice. Is that a big loss?
It is. He started all 18 games as a rookie. Wasn't super productive, put up 300 yards, but I think was poised for a bit of a breakout year after getting his feet wet in 2024. I think the important thing for Ottawa is how well they drafted at the receiver position, taking Keelan White, who I think is a high floor guy who's going to be able to start right away, and then Ethan Jordan, the Wilfrid Laurier standout, who can fill in that backup role behind him. The Elks have signed former first-round pick Francis Bemmy, who was cut by the BC Lions. Can he rejuvenate his CFL career in Edmonton?
I hope so for his sake. I liked him a lot coming out in the draft. He just really hasn't found his fit in the CFL, and I think the stiffness issues he had in college have really reared their head as well. He'll have a chance because Noah Curtis is on the injury list, but I don't know that it's going to be a long-term fit. Scott Milanovich said he was pissed off at Bo Levi Mitchell for throwing practice interceptions, but Mitchell said he appreciates the hard coaching. Does that seem like a healthy dynamic?
I think it does. Scott Milanovich is going to tell you how he feels, and you don't have to wonder about it. And it's very clear that Bo Levi Mitchell is open to taking the coaching, even though he's won two MLPs, won two Grey Cups. At this point in his career, he could just be like, nah, I don't want to be coached hard. I'm just going to go out and do my thing. So I think that potentially bodes well for the Ticats. But Bo Levi Mitchell's got to stop throwing picks, fellas. That is very clear. Or he could find himself back on the bench. Dalton Schoen has returned to practice with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. How big a deal is that for the blue and gold, Hodge?
Huge. I think it's hugely important for the comfort of Zach Kolarra. Zach called Dalton Schoen the smartest player on the field. And Mike O'Shea has regularly referred to Dalton Schoen as the best receiver in the CFL. So I think Schoen being back will have a hugely positive impact on Winnipeg's passing game. The Ottawa Redblacks have released former second-round pick Deontay Knight, who has now gone through three CFL teams in as many seasons. Is this the end of the road for the Western product?
I think it probably is based on how many teams he's been with. He hasn't shown a lot at the CFL level. And it's just a reminder to everybody, when we go through the draft process, it doesn't matter what your hype is. This is a guy who went to the East Rush Shrine Bowl, who was getting NFL interest and just didn't pan out as a CFL player. The Riders will be without center Sean McEwen for a while, according to head coach Corey Mace. How badly will they miss him?
I think they'll miss his veteran experience, but the Riders showed last year under first-year offensive line coach Edwin Harrison that they can roll with the punches, so to speak, on that offensive line and fill in. So, you know, currently in training camp, it's Zach Fry, who is taking the majority of the reps at center. Philip Gagneau, I think, was also, you know, practicing his snaps there as well. We know Logan Ferland can play center. So the Riders have shown last year that they can fill in the pieces when there's injuries, but there's no doubt that Sean McEwen would have been the best option there. Mike O'Shea praised the Winnipeg Jets for their courage and leadership as the team played the final game of their playoff run less than a day after the passing of Mark Scheifele's father. Hodge, was that warranted?
I think that especially in the NHL, we've gotten too soft on athletes who underperform in the playoffs. That being said, I do think there are extenuating circumstances with the Jets, given that one of their star players literally lost his father the night before the what ended up being final playoff game of the season. So I thought what Mike O'Shea said was great. And he is somebody who cares, especially as a native of North Bay, Ontario, a tremendous amount about hockey. He is a huge hockey fan, and so it was nice to see him offer these kind words for the other major professional team in town. Last one, the Toronto Argonauts have signed Canadian offensive lineman Anem Dunkwa following his release from the Washington Commanders. Is he a good fit there?
He fits a need because they'll potentially be playing a Canadian at tackle, and he's another guy who did that in college, but we had major questions about him coming through the draft in terms of his ability to move on a CFL field. He's over 350 pounds, 6'8". He was the biggest guy at the NFL Combine in his year. I don't know if that's going to translate. I'll be interested to see it.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. Be sure to subscribe and follow and give us all kinds of good stuff with the thumbs up and the accolades and the comments. We'll see you next week when we recap four preseason games across the country.
And it's going to
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.